Pauline paused a beat and then opened the bag and peeled off some bills and put them on the kitchen counter. Then she refolded the bag and put it in the oven. I don't have a safe here. The oven will do. Just don't forget and start to cook something. She took four bills from the stack on the counter and handed them to him. For clothes. You're going to need them. We leave for England tonight. Your guy got back to you? She nodded. Taylor was on British Airways to London less than 4 hours after Burke put the money in the Jaguar. Alone? Apparently, as far as we can tell. He was seated next to some British woman. Doesn't mean he didn't have a partner who checked in separately and sat somewhere else. That would have been a fairly basic precaution. There were 67 unaccompanied adult American males on the flight. Your guy's very thorough. Yes, he is. He got the whole manifest, by fax, including the baggage manifest. Taylor checked 3 bags. Overweight charge? No, he was in business class. They might have let it slide. I don't need $400 for clothes. You do if you're traveling with me. I was an MP, Reacher had said to Hobart. I've done everything before. But he hadn't. 30 minutes later, he was doing something he had never done in his life. He was buying clothes in a department store. He was in Macy's on Herald Square in the men's department, in front of a cash register, holding a pair of gray pants, a gray jacket, a black T-shirt, a black V-neck sweater, a pair of black socks, and a pair of white boxer shorts. His choices had been limited by the availability of suitable sizes, inseam, arm length, and chest. He was worried that his brown shoes would be a color clash. Pauling told him to buy new shoes, too. He vetoed that idea. He couldn't afford them. So she said brown shoes would be just fine with gray pants. He shuffled to the head of the line and paid $396 and change, with tax. He showered and dressed back at Pauling's apartment and took his creased and battered passport and Patty Joseph's envelope of photographs out of his old pants and shoved them in his new pants. Took his folding toothbrush out of his old shirt pocket and put it in his new jacket pocket. Carried his old clothes down the corridor to the compactor room and dropped them in the garbage chute. Then he waited with Pauling downstairs in the lobby, neither of them saying much, until the car service showed up to take them to the airport. Chapter 56. Pauling had booked them business class on the same flight that Taylor had taken 48 hours previously. It was maybe even the same plane, assuming it flew a round trip every day. But neither one of them could have been in Taylor's actual seat. They were in a window and aisle pair, and the Homeland Security manifest had shown that Taylor had been in the first of a block of 4 in the center. The seats themselves were strange bathtub-shaped cocoons that faced alternating directions. Reacher's window seat faced aft, and next to him, Pauling faced forward. The seats were advertised as reclining into fully flat beds, which might have been true for her, but was about 12 inches shy of being true for him. But the seats had compensations. The face-to-face thing meant that he was going to spend 7 hours looking directly at her, which was no kind of a hardship. What's the strategy? We'll find Taylor. Lane will take care of him, and then I'll take care of Lane. Oh. I'll think of something. Like Hobart said, everything in war is improvisation. What about the others? That would be a snap decision. If I think the crew will fall apart with Lane gone, then I'll leave the others alone and let it. But if one of them wants to step up to the officer class and take over, I'll do him too. And so on and so forth, until the crew really does fall apart. Brutal. Compared to what? Taylor won't be easy to find. England's a small country. Not that small. We found Hobart. With help, we were given his address. We'll get by. How? I've got a plan. Tell me. You know any British private investigators? Is there an international brotherhood? There might be a sisterhood. I've got some numbers. Okay, then. Is that your plan? Hire a London PI? Local knowledge, it's always the key. We could have done that by phone. We didn't have time. London alone is 8 million people. Then there's Birmingham, Manchester, Sheffield, Leeds, and a whole lot of countryside. The Cotswolds, Stratford-upon-Avon, and Scotland and Wales. Taylor stepped out the door at Heathrow 2 days ago. He could be anywhere by now. We don't even know where he's from. We'll get by. Poling took a pillow and a blanket from a stewardess and reclined her seat. Reacher watched her sleep for a while, and then he lay down too, with his knees up and his head jammed against the bathtub wall. The cabin lighting was soft and blue, and the hiss of the engines was restful. Reacher liked flying. Going to sleep in New York and waking up in London was a fantasy that could have been designed expressly for him. The stewardess woke him to give him breakfast. Like being in a hospital, he thought. They wake you up to feed you. But the breakfast was good. Mugs of hot coffee and bacon rolls. He drank six and ate six. Pauling watched him, fascinated.
What time is it?
5 to 5 in the morning. Which is 5 to 10 in the morning in this time zone. Then all kinds of muted bells went off, and signs went on to announce the start of their approach into Heathrow Airport. London's northerly latitude meant that at 10 in the morning in late summer the sun was high. The landscape below was lit up bright. There were small clouds in the sky that cast shadows on the fields. Reacher's sense of direction wasn't as good as his sense of time, but he figured they had looped past the city and were approaching the airport from the east. Then the plane turned sharply, and he realized they were in a holding pattern. Heathrow was notoriously busy. They were going to circle London at least once, maybe twice. He put his forehead against the window and stared down. Saw the Thames, glittering in the sun like polished lead. Saw Tower Bridge, white stone, recently cleaned, detailed with fresh paint on the ironwork. Then a gray warship moored in the river, some kind of a permanent exhibit. Then London Bridge. He craned his neck and looked for St. Paul's Cathedral, north and west. Saw the big dome, crowded by ancient winding streets. London was a low-built city, densely and chaotically packed near the dramatic curves of the Thames, spreading infinitely into the gray distance beyond. He saw railroad tracks fanning out into Waterloo Station, saw the Houses of Parliament, saw Big Ben, shorter and stumpier than he remembered it, and Westminster Cathedral, white, bulky, 1,000 years old. There was some kind of a giant Ferris wheel on the opposite bank of the river. A tourist thing, maybe. Green trees everywhere. He saw Buckingham Palace and Hyde Park. He glanced north of where the palace gardens ended and found the Park Lane Hilton, a round tower bristling with balconies. From above it looked like a squat wedding cake. Then he glanced a little farther north and found the American Embassy, Grosvenor Square. He had once used an office there, in a windowless basement. 4 weeks, for some big deal army investigation he could barely recall. But he remembered the neighborhood. He remembered it pretty well. Too rich for his blood, until you escaped east into Soho. He asked Pauling, "Have you been here before?"
"We did exchange training with Scotland Yard."
"That could be useful."
"It was 1 million years ago."